This is Crush Performance. If you have questions, comments, or smart remarks, write to us at crushperformance.com. You're listening to Crush Performance with the Crusher, Jeff Crushell. Get in on the talent grid and follow him on Twitter at Jeff Crush. Now, here he is, the Crusher.
And welcome to Crush Performance. I am Jeff Crushell. If you would like to get in touch with us, please do so via the internet. It's crushperformance.com. You'll find Twitter, Facebook, podcast, blog, everything available online, of course. Today, a really big show. I'm excited about this one. We finally tracked down and set up an interview with David Epstein, author of The Sports Gene. Inside the Science of Extraordinary Athletic Performance is the title of the book. And David, of course, a renowned investigative reporter writing for a number of publications, including Sports Illustrated. And we'll look at his research that he spent years in the making, traveling the world, as a matter of fact, trying to find answers to his questions that turn into to his great book, The Sports Gene. And the information here in the book, and of course in the interview today, will go well beyond sports as we look at the process of talent development and human development. Is it technology? Is it genes? Is it environment? What is this thing called grit and character? We're going to try to get to the bottom of it today with David Epstein. And without further ado, let's do that. David, thanks for coming on the show today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Well, the book's been out for a while now, and I've been waiting and waiting for this conversation because it was a fascinating read for me. I actually read it on my way over to do an assignment for Major League Baseball in Europe. And boy, it sang true for me. Most certainly. How about we start with this? What was sort of the mindset that led you down the road to do this book, Inside the Science of Extraordinary Athletic Performance, is sort of the tagline?
Well, I can point to kind of a couple things that came out of my own athletic career that really drove me to this. And the first was I grew up in an area with a lot of Jamaican immigrants. And it, we had these great track teams. You know, we didn't lose our conference for 24 straight years. And when I was a teenager and sort of flipped open an atlas and saw that Jamaica's an island of 2.5 million people, you know, I sort of started to think, well, what's going on over there that's producing all these great runners? And then I went on to run in college. Now I'm running against Kenyan guys and meeting some of them and realizing they're all from the same one town. In like the middle of nowhere in Kenya. And again, I'm wondering what's going on there. At the same time, I'm in a training group, training with five guys, stride for stride, day after day, same eating, living together, and yet we're getting more different, not more the same. And so I just started to have these questions. You know, that combined with things like watching on TV a softball pitcher able to strike out some of the best Major League Baseball hitters, I just started to sort of accumulate in my head this list of questions about either what I had done or what I had seen in sports. And so finally when I, you know, it's like the dirty secret of this book. It's like 15 of my own deepest questions about athleticism.
I like it. We're talking with David Epstein, author of The Sports Gene. Hey, the website is thesportsgene.com. Of course, your blog is there and some other great information. And as you talk about your athletic career, you ran varsity track for Columbia. You were an 800-meter man. That's what we call glutton for punishment and pain and agony. It's one of the toughest events out there, no question about it.
That's what we who run it call, you were slightly too slow to make it in Division I as a 400-meter runner. So if you want to play, this is what you got to do.
Right. Okay. Well, yeah, I like that mindset for sure. Well, hey, let's talk about the book. You mentioned it there about Jenny Finch pitching to the major league guys. And early in the book, it's a really cool section of the book. You have Beat by an Underhand Girl, talking about Pujols, Cameron Piazza, Bonds, and all these great hitters who couldn't touch a pitch by Jenny Finch. And I thought this was a real interesting way to introduce the idea of sort of maybe specialization and environment.
Yeah, and because I thought, you know, when I first saw that on television, when Jenny, who was at the time one of the best softball pitchers in the world, had this show where she would go around to different teams, you know, every week and face some of their hitters, and none of them could touch her. And I was like, well, how is that possible? So I immediately calculated the transit time of the ball, because she's throwing like 62, 63 from a 43-foot mound. But that's actually a longer time to get to the hitter than what they're used to facing at the major league level. So I'm thinking, well, if their reflexes are fast enough to hit 100-mile-per-hour fastballs, what's going on here? And the ball's bigger, too. You know, and obviously those guys felt the same way. But it turns out that that human reaction time isn't even fast enough to do what's asked of major league hitters. The only way they can do it is by gauging, you know, movements of the torso, rotation of the pitcher's shoulder, flicker of the ball, which is the flashing pattern the seams make right when it's out of the hand, to basically predict what's coming in the future. Because otherwise it's too slow. Like that advice to keep your eye on the ball, nonsense. Can't do it. our eyes don't track fast enough to track something moving that fast. You could close your eyes once the ball's halfway and it wouldn't make a difference. So it's really only by this learned ability to interpret body movements that allow you not to rely on reaction speed that baseball players are able to do what they do. And when they're faced with an unfamiliar pitching motion, unfamiliar spin of the ball, unfamiliar shoulder rotation, they're stripped of that learned skill that allows them to do what they do.
Yeah, and that's fascinating. We're talking with David Epstein, author of The Sports Gene. You know, David, and that led you right into what I thought was an interesting look at some of the science out there by Janet Starks and Bruce Abernathy, talking about like the occlusion test, anticipation skills. And, you know, the one thing that I really liked was some of the work Janet Starks did on the volleyball players, looking at, you know, just those little flashcards and just their ability to anticipate what was going on in the court in this flash of a picture. And I guess that goes back to this whole idea of experience being a real important part of the success in sport.
Absolutely. I mean, that study you're talking about was where Janet Starks was using pictures of volleyball scenarios and showing them to players for a really short time to figure out, could they tell if the ball is in the picture or not, if they're only flashed the picture fast enough to not even see the ball? Like, what information can they glean? And one of the best players in the world, she got her down to flashing the picture for only 16 milliseconds. And the woman could tell whether the ball was in the frame or not just from sort of the arrangements of colors. I saw that. I tried that, and it like literally looked like somebody just flicked a flashlight in my face. I could see nothing.
Right.
You know, but through having exposed yourself to game situations over and over and over, they've learned how to unconsciously basically quickly interpret these signals, you know, and that's like what quarterbacks mean when they talk about the game slowing down, right? Obviously, the game is not slowing down. It's that they're seeing what's going to happen before it happens because they're judging the arrangements of players in relation to one another that allows them to make meaning of the parts in the whole. You know, and we all do this what's called chunking, grouping things into meaningful phrases in things in which we're expert. Like if I gave you 20 random English words in some chaotic order, you'd probably not be able to repeat them back to me. But if I give you a 20-word sentence, you might be able to repeat it back to me because you've learned unifying relationships that give those words meaning in context with one another, and that helps you remember and interpret and even guess what's coming next.
Sure, and I guess that goes right back to the idea of what happened with the major league hitters with Jenny Finch, right? It was an entirely sort of alien environment to them, and they just couldn't put it together because it was unfamiliar.
Exactly. And it parallels exactly what's been seen in chess masters, which has been studied for a long time. Back in the 40s, chess masters were given boards and players of different ability levels, and the grandmasters could recreate an entire board after seeing it for only 3 seconds. And so for decades, it was assumed that they just, you know, were smarter or had better memories, basically. And then the study was repeated, but this time when you gave them boards that didn't have meaningful game arrangements, they couldn't do it anymore. They were just like novices. So it turned out it was just that they had learned all these chunks, these groups of pieces that cue them into what's really going on the board and draws a relationship between all the pieces.
We're talking with David Epstein, investigative reporter. He writes on a number of topics, including sports medicine, Olympics, sports science, and it's been an interesting trek sort of reading through this book, and you got that chance to travel around the world, and as you mentioned, answer your 15 questions, which is a fascinating experience for sure. And as we talk about the idea of learning and experience, you know, David, there's an interesting sort of, well, I don't want to say it's an argument out there, but there's a sort of a conflict of opinion when it comes to, you know, the idea of practice, and you allude to it in your book, the idea of deliberate practice and this whole idea that Anders Ericsson, you know, the 10,000 hour rule and this process of human development. And then the other side where, you know, we have researchers in the UK going, okay, deliberate practice is only a small part of the picture. I think this is a really interesting time in sports performance because we're kind of getting through this minutia of information and we're coming out on the other side with a better understanding of what it's really all about.
Yeah, and I would agree with that 100% because I think there's been this desire to have like a real reductionist approach. I mean, you can find it everywhere you turn, whether it's looking for 10,000-hour rules or pitting nature against nurture and genes against practice. You know, I think you're right. I think we're starting to get through that to look sort of at the real complexity and figure out what things matter for performance and what things we can do something about. And I hope I contributed that conversation a little bit.
No, you certainly did. And for anybody who's got a child in sports, if you're a fan of sports or if you're involved in sports, you know, this is a crush must read. It'll be going up on our website for sure. It's called The Sports Gene, Inside the Science of Extraordinary Athletic Performance. We're talking with the author, David Epstein. Well, let's go to this. You know, because one of the things that really comes through in the book, David, is the fact that, you know what? People gravitate towards things they're good in. And there might be actual, you know, this idea of nature versus nurture. It's a beautiful combination of these things now. But you start with nature, and then maybe you go towards an area where you could be nurtured. And I really like the conversation on Major League Baseball players and vision with Dr. Rosenbaum and Dr. Labey. Of course, that's sort of my world now, being involved in Major League Baseball forever. But I thought this was fascinating when you just simply sort of hone down on the idea of visual acuity and visual performance, and how, you know, these baseball players are typically above average when it comes to that, you know, sort of genetic trait.
Yeah, no, it's an interesting thing. And actually, if you look deeply into the studies, kids, visual acuity just being sort of one of the raw measures of vision, that's not, you know, you can change visual acuity with things like glasses, but your maximum is sort of set by the density of photoreceptors in your eye. It's like the megapixel rating of a camera. You know, you can't go beyond that certain maximum. And you can already see, if you look at young baseball players, like kids who have subpar visual acuity starts self-selecting out already in Little League. And especially if they have subpar depth perception, they don't learn catching skills as quickly, so they just start to fall behind. And that even continues even at the major league level. Average visual acuity, which is about 20/12 for hitters, meaning they see from 20 feet away what I have to stand at 12 feet away to see, is better than guys who are in the minors for a long time. You know, so clearly, they couldn't hit Jenny Finch, right? So it's clearly dependent on a learned skill. At the same time, once you learn those skills, there's certain what I call physical hardware traits that give you a better whole operating machine once you've gotten the software or the sport-specific skills that you have to learn.
I like that, physical hardware. And I also like the idea that you mentioned here, and I think this is in the book as well, self-selecting out. And this is what we're seeing. You know, David, the Canadian Hockey AGM just finished up here a couple weeks ago, and they looked at the registration numbers across the country, and they're down a little bit, and everybody's panicking kind of, and they're trying to put a finger on a solution or a reason that, you know, numbers are down a little bit. It's only 3%. It's not significant. The women's game actually is up, so which is intriguing. But, you know, there's the idea of, you know, kids have a lot of different options now. There are massive conversations in the media about injuries and concussions, so kids may deviate or families may deviate away from hockey because of that. But I like this idea, and I think it's important for coaches and parents to understand this whole concept of self-selecting out. I really liked when you said that.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, and I don't think it should always necessarily be looked at as only a bad thing, right? Like,
right.
Obviously, we don't want sports participation to drop, but if it's people finding a niche that fits them better, you know, like grit is kind of a buzzword now in a lot of sports performance, desire or ability to persevere and overcome challenges. And I think we should add fit to that word. And luckily they rhyme, because I think, you know, I've been writing about this lately. The sports science shows that at least through age 12, kids should have what's called a sampling period, where they try a range of different sports. One, they gain a range of different skills, but also some of them find the activity that best fits both their physiology and their psychology. And so sometimes in some countries that have one sport that's so much more popular than all the others, you probably push some people toward that sport without a sampling period, when they really could have more success in some other sport.
Yeah.
And so I don't think it's always bad. It just depends where those kids are going.
Yeah, and hopefully you're right, not away from sport, no question about it. We're talking with David Epstein, investigative reporter and author of The Sports Gene. The website is thesportsgene.com. You can check it out and also order the book there. Fascinating read. Well, let's get into something really interesting. There's a part of the book that comes shortly after the MLB Vision discussion, where you talk about a real cool heading that I thought, and it really caught my attention, and once I started, I couldn't put this part of it down. Will women soon outrun men? And the reason, men have nipples. I think that's how it goes in your book.
Yeah,
but this is a real interesting one for me, because it sort of really strongly reflects on the sort of nurture side, the impact of environment on performance. And your perspective on why women are where they're at, I thought was a fascinating take, because I hadn't thought of it before.
Yeah, I mean, so one of the reasons I sort of investigated that was because there were some sort of strict nurturist, I guess, sports psychologists who felt that, you know, genes are meaningless. So the most basic question I could ask was then, well, why are male and female athletes separated, right? And so in that chapter, of course, I go through some of the differences, but it's for female athletes, I mean, one thing you see in the sports that are easy to quantify is their records are basically like stuck in the 1980s, which is kind of unfortunate, because that was like an era of mega doping, and it shows how powerful male hormones are, basically, on
right.
female
yeah.
competitors. And so that sort of spoiled the record hunt for a lot of women's sports, unfortunately.
Yeah, no, that is a fascinating read. And yet, you know, we just had a discussion here last week, you know, of course, as the golf season is underway and the U.S. Open and some of the majors start kicking off here. We were looking at the LPGA and the incredible fascination that we have right now with the Korean golfers just dominating the game. In 1997, there were no golfers from South Korea at all. By 2011, there were 43. And, you know, they kind of nicknamed them the Soul Sisters because they were all coming out of this area where they're now producing these unbelievable female golfers that are, by the way, dominating the LPGA. I think it's a fascinating experiment in itself.
Absolutely, no doubt about it. And I think golf is, you know, a sport that is not as physiologically limiting as a lot of other sports are. And so I think if a country can get, you know, a big pipeline for people into golf and excited about it and keep them healthy, I think that's the kind of thing that you're going to see. And I don't think any other country is doing that to the extent that Korea is. You know, maybe some others will, but most countries don't really have a big influx of youth golf. And Korea does, where they're, you know, using more modern training methods and things like that. So I think other places will catch up, but you know, it takes time.
We're talking with David Epstein, author of The Sports Gene. Hey, just before we go to a break here, I got to ask you about this, the Heritage Project. Health risk factors, training, and genetics. This is a pretty interesting part of the book for me. It really gets into the genetic side, and this is a touchy subject for all of us. But what we're learning about genes and gene mapping now could have a dark side as well, don't you think?
No doubt about it. I mean, I think that I just got called and asked about the Uzbekistan's Olympic Committee is starting to, like, gene test kids, you know, because that study that you referred to shows that we can sort of predict some of the responsiveness to training of people in a certain trait, and it's totally has nothing to do with how good they are to begin with, but how well they will adapt to the training is based very much on their genes. And, you know, so how is that going to be used? And I think we really need to be having these discussions like yesterday, because it's powerful technology, and it's going to become more powerful and cheaper. And I think, you know, are we going to use those for good, or are we going to use them to screen kids and try to put them in boxes and all that kind of stuff? So I hope we don't diminish the good of sports by getting too crazy about this stuff.
Yeah, and I think you're right. It could get very touch and go. And I can see this really, David, working its way very quickly into the professional ranks. You know, look, we just had the NFL combines, NHL combines just went down, the MLB draft. And if there was ever one area that I'm scared that the gene testing falls into, this is the one, because it's going to really change the landscape, and not for the better, I don't think.
I mean, there's some protection from employers ordering you to have genetic tests, but who knows where that's really going to go. And there are already tests that can show some elevated risk for injury, like you know, tearing your ACL.
Yes,
something like that. And we know very well that there's a gene that shows some people have diminished ability to recover from a concussion, right? Like, can you imagine if NFL teams figured out that somebody has that before the draft? Like, that could be dangerous information. I think we need to really, really get busy making rigorous regulations about genetic privacy.
This is a real important topic. Hey, stay tuned. We'll cut off for a quick break here, and we'll be back with more David Epstein, author of The Sports Gene, right after this on Crush Performance. Once you commit yourself to the world of sport performance, it doesn't turn off. It's always coming at you, and you have to be ready to respond. That's sport performance. But how do you put it all together to get the results you need? Now you can learn how as Crush Performance presents The Sport Matrix, a program designed to help athletes navigate the world of sport performance and athlete development to find out what it really takes to achieve human maximum performance. The Sport Matrix. For more information, go to crushperformance.com.
Find out what it takes to be a top performer. Get the Crush blog, podcast, and newsletter at crushperformance.com. Now, back to the show.
And welcome to Crush Performance. I am Jeff Crochelle. If you would like to get in touch with us, please do so via the internet. It's crushperformance.com. You'll find Twitter, Facebook, podcast, blog, everything available online, of course. Today, a really big show. I'm excited about this one. We finally tracked down and set up an interview with David Epstein, author of The Sports Gene. Inside the Science of Extraordinary Athletic Performance is the title of the book. And David, of course, a renowned investigative reporter writing for a number of publications, including Sports Illustrated. And we'll look at his research that he spent years in the making, traveling the world, as a matter of fact, trying to find answers to his questions that turn into his great book, The Sports Gene. And the information here in the book and, of course, in the interview today will go well beyond sports as we look at the process of talent development and human development. Is it technology? Is it genes? Is it environment? What is this thing called grit and character? We're going to try to get to the bottom of it today with David Epstein. And without further ado, let's do that. David, thanks for coming on the show today.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Well, the book's been out for a while now, and I've been waiting and waiting for this conversation because it was a fascinating read for me. I actually read it on my way over to do an assignment for Major League Baseball in Europe. And boy, it sang true for me. Most certainly. How about we start with this? What was sort of the mindset that led you down the road to do this book, Inside the Science of Extraordinary Athletic Performance, is sort of the tagline?
Well, I can point to kind of a couple things that came out of my own athletic career that really drove me to this. And the first was I grew up in an area with a lot of Jamaican immigrants. And it, we had these great track teams. You know, we didn't lose our conference for 24 straight years. And when I was a teenager and sort of flipped open an atlas and saw that Jamaica's an island of 2.5 million people, you know, I sort of started to think, well, what's going on over there that's producing all these great runners? And then I went on to run in college. Now I'm running against Kenyan guys and meeting some of them and realizing they're all from the same one town. In like the middle of nowhere in Kenya. And again, I'm wondering what's going on there. At the same time, I'm in a training group, training with five guys, stride for stride, day after day, same eating, living together, and yet we're getting more different, not more the same. And so I just started to have these questions. You know, that combined with things like watching on TV a softball pitcher able to strike out some of the best Major League Baseball hitters, I just started to sort of accumulate in my head this list of questions about either what I had done or what I had seen in sports. And so finally when I, you know, that's like the dirty secret of this book. It's like 15 of my own deepest questions about athleticism.
I like it. We're talking with David Epstein, author of The Sports Gene. Hey, the website is thesportsgene.com. Of course, your blog is there and some other great information. And as you talk about your athletic career, you ran varsity track for Columbia. You were an 800-meter man. That's what we call glutton for punishment and pain and agony. It's one of the toughest events out there, no question about it.
That's what we who run it call, you were slightly too slow to make it in Division I as a 400-meter runner. So if you want to play, this is what you got to do.
Right. Okay. Well, yeah, I like that mindset for sure. Well, hey, let's talk about the book. You mentioned it there about Jenny Finch pitching to the major league guys. And early in the book, it's a really cool section of the book. You have Beat by an Underhand Girl talking about Pujols, Cameron Piazza, Bonds, and all these great hitters who couldn't touch a pitch by Jenny Finch. And I thought this was a real interesting way to introduce the idea of sort of maybe specialization and environment.
Yeah, and because I thought, you know, when I first saw that on television, when Jenny, who was at the time one of the best softball pitchers in the world, had this show where she would go around to different teams, you know, every week and face some of their hitters, and none of them could touch her. And I was like, well, how is that possible? So I immediately calculated the transit time of the ball, because she's throwing like 62, 63 from a 43-foot mound. But that's actually a longer time to get to the hitter than what they're used to facing at the major league level. So I'm thinking, well, if their reflexes are fast enough to hit 100-mile-per-hour fastballs, what's going on here? And the ball's bigger, too. You know, and obviously those guys felt the same way. But it turns out that human reaction time isn't even fast enough to do what's asked of major league hitters. The only way they can do it is by gauging, you know, movements of the torso, rotation of the pitcher's shoulder, flicker of the ball, which is the flashing pattern the seams make right when it's out of the hand, to basically predict what's coming in the future. Because otherwise it's too slow. Like that advice to keep your eye on the ball, nonsense. Can't do it. Our eyes don't track fast enough to track something moving that fast. You could close your eyes once the ball's halfway and it wouldn't make a difference. So it's really only by this learned ability to interpret body movements that allow you not to rely on reaction speed that baseball players are able to do what they do. And when they're faced with an unfamiliar pitching motion, unfamiliar spin of the ball, unfamiliar shoulder rotation, they're stripped of that learned skill that allows them to do what they do.
Yeah, and that's fascinating. We're talking with David Epstein, author of The Sports Gene. You know, David, and that led you right into what I thought was an interesting look at some of the science out there by Janet Starks and Bruce Abernathy, talking about like the occlusion test, anticipation skills. And, you know, the one thing that I really liked was some of the work Janet Starks did on the volleyball players, looking at, you know, just those little flashcards and just their ability to anticipate what was going on in the court in this flash of a picture. And I guess that goes back to this whole idea of experience being a real important part of the success in sport.
Absolutely. I mean, that study you're talking about was where Janet Starks was using pictures of volleyball scenarios and showing them to players for a really short time to figure out, could they tell if the ball is in the picture or not, if they're only flashed the picture fast enough to not even see the ball? Like, what information can they glean? And one of the best players in the world, she got her down to flashing the picture for only 16 milliseconds. And the woman could tell whether the ball was in the frame or not just from sort of the arrangements of colors. I saw that. I tried that, and it like literally looked like somebody just flicked a flashlight in my face. I could see nothing.
Right.
You know, but through having exposed yourself to game situations over and over and over, they've learned how to unconsciously basically quickly interpret these signals, you know, and that's like what quarterbacks mean when they talk about the game slowing down, right? Obviously, the game is not slowing down. It's that they're seeing what's going to happen before it happens because they're judging the arrangements of players in relation to one another that allows them to make meaning of the parts in the whole, you know. And we all do this what's called chunking, grouping things into meaningful phrases in things in which we're expert. Like if I gave you 20 random English words in some chaotic order, you'd probably not be able to repeat them back to me. But if I give you a 20-word sentence, you might be able to repeat it back to me because you've learned unifying relationships that give those words meaning in context with one another, and that helps you remember and interpret and even guess what's coming next.
Sure, and I guess that goes right back to the idea of what happened with the major league hitters with Jenny Finch, right? It was an entirely sort of alien environment to them, and they just couldn't put it together because it was unfamiliar.
Exactly, exactly. And it parallels exactly what's been seen in chess masters, where this has been studied for a long time. Back in the 40s, chess masters were given boards and players of different ability levels, and the grandmasters could recreate an entire board after seeing it for only 3 seconds. And so for decades, it was assumed that they just, you know, were smarter or had better memories, basically. And then the study was repeated, but this time when you gave them boards that didn't have meaningful game arrangements, they couldn't do it anymore. They were just like novices. So it turned out it was just that they had learned all these chunks, these groups of pieces that cue them into what's really going on the board and draws a relationship between all the pieces.
We're talking with David Epstein, investigative reporter. He writes on a number of topics, including sports medicine, Olympics, sports science, and it's been an interesting trek sort of reading through this book, and you got a chance to travel around the world, and as you mentioned, answer your 15 questions, which is a fascinating experience for sure. And as we talk about the idea of learning and experience, you know, David, there's an interesting sort of, well, I don't want to say it's an argument out there, but there's a sort of a conflict of opinion when it comes to, you know, the idea of practice, and you allude to it in your book, the idea of deliberate practice and this whole idea that Anders Ericsson, you know, the 10,000 hour rule and this process of human development. And then the other side where, you know, we have researchers in the UK going, okay, deliberate practice is only a small part of the picture. I think this is a really interesting time in sports performance because we're kind of getting through this minutia of information and we're coming out on the other side with a better understanding of what it's really all about.
Yeah, and I would agree with that 100% because I think there's been this desire to have like a real reductionist approach. I mean, you can find it everywhere you turn, whether it's looking for 10,000-hour rules or pitting nature against nurture and genes against practice. You know, I think you're right. I think we're starting to get through that to look sort of at the real complexity and figure out what things matter for performance and what things we can do something about. And I hope I contributed to that conversation a little bit.
No, you certainly did. And for anybody who's got a child in sports, if you're a fan of sports or if you're involved in sports, you know, this is a crush must read. It'll be going up on our website for sure. It's called The Sports Gene, Inside the Science of Extraordinary Athletic Performance. We're talking with the author, David Epstein. Well, let's go to this. You know, because one of the things that really comes through in the book, David, is the fact that, you know what? People gravitate towards things they're good in. And there might be actual, you know, this idea of nature versus nurture. It's a beautiful combination of these things now. But you start with nature, and then maybe you go towards an area where you could be nurtured. And I really like the conversation on Major League Baseball players and vision with Dr. Rosenbaum and Dr. Labey. Of course, that's sort of my world now, being involved in Major League Baseball forever. But I thought this was fascinating when you just simply sort of hone down on the idea of visual acuity and visual performance, and how, you know, these baseball players are typically above average when it comes to that, you know, sort of genetic trait.
Yeah, no, it's an interesting thing. And actually, if you look deeply into the studies, kids' visual acuity just being sort of one of the raw measures of vision, that's not, you know, you can change visual acuity with things like glasses, but your maximum is sort of set by the density of photoreceptors in your eye. It's like the megapixel rating of a camera. You know, you can't go beyond that certain maximum. And you can already see, if you look at young baseball players, like kids who have subpar visual acuity start self-selecting out already in Little League. And especially if they have subpar depth perception, they don't learn catching skills as quickly, so they just start to fall behind. And that even continues even at the major league level. Average visual acuity, which is about 20/12 for hitters, meaning they see from 20 feet away what I have to stand at 12 feet away to see, is better than guys who are in the minors for a long time. You know, so clearly they couldn't hit Jenny Finch, right? So it's clearly dependent on a learned skill. At the same time, once you learn those skills, there's certain what I call physical hardware traits that give you a better whole operating machine once you've gotten the software or the sport-specific skills that you have to learn.
I like that, physical hardware. And I also like the idea that you mentioned here, and I think this is in the book as well, self-selecting out. And this is what we're seeing. You know, David, the Canadian Hockey AGM just finished up here a couple weeks ago, and they looked at the registration numbers across the country, and they're down a little bit, and everybody's panicking kind of, and they're trying to put a finger on a solution or a reason that, you know, numbers are down a little bit. It's only 3%. It's not significant. The women's game actually is up, so which is intriguing. But, you know, there's the idea of, you know, kids have a lot of different options now. There are massive conversations in the media about injuries and concussions, so kids may deviate, or families may deviate away from hockey because of that. But I like this idea, and I think it's important for coaches and parents to understand this whole concept of self-selecting out. I really liked when you said that.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, and I don't think it should always necessarily be looked at as only a bad thing, right? Like,
right.
Obviously, we don't want sports participation to drop, but if it's people finding a niche that fits them better, you know, like grit is kind of a buzzword now in a lot of sports performance, desire or ability to persevere and overcome challenges. And I think we should add fit to that word. And luckily they rhyme, because I think, you know, I've been writing about this lately. The sports science shows that at least through age 12, kids should have what's called a sampling period, where they try a range of different sports. One, they gain a range of different skills, but also some of them find the activity that best fits both their physiology and their psychology. And so sometimes in some countries that have one sport that's so much more popular than all the others, you probably push some people toward that sport without a sampling period, when they really could have more success in some other sport.
Yeah.
And so I don't think it's always bad. It just depends where those kids are going.
Yeah, and hopefully you're right, not away from sport, no question about it. We're talking with David Epstein, investigative reporter and author of The Sports Gene. The website is thesportsgene.com. You can check it out and also order the book there. Fascinating read. Well, let's get into something really interesting. There's a part of the book that comes shortly after the MLB Vision discussion, where you talk about a real cool heading that I thought, and it really caught my attention, and I couldn't put this part of it down. Will women soon outrun men? And the reason, men have nipples. I think that's how it goes in your book.
Yeah,
but this is a real interesting one for me, because it sort of really strongly reflects on the sort of nurture side, the impact of environment on performance. And your perspective on why women are where they're at, I thought was a fascinating take, because I hadn't thought of it before.
Yeah, I mean, so one of the reasons I sort of investigated that was because there were some sort of strict nurturist, I guess, sports psychologists who felt that, you know, genes are meaningless. So the most basic question I could ask was then, well, why are male and female athletes separated, right? And so in that chapter, of course, I go through some of the differences, but it's for female athletes, I mean, one thing you see in the sports that are easy to quantify is their records are basically like stuck in the 1980s, which is kind of unfortunate, because that was like an era of mega doping, and it shows how powerful male hormones are, basically, on
right.
female
yeah.
competitors. And so that sort of spoiled the record hunt for a lot of women's sports, unfortunately.
Yeah, no, that is a fascinating read. And yet, you know, we just had a discussion here last week, you know, of course, as the golf season is underway and the U.S. Open and some of the majors start kicking off here. Well, we were looking at the LPGA and the incredible fascination that we have right now with the Korean golfers just dominating the game. In 1997, there were no golfers from South Korea at all. By 2011, there were 43. And, you know, they kind of nicknamed them the Soul Sisters because they were all coming out of this area where they're now producing these unbelievable female golfers that are, by the way, dominating the LPGA. I think it's a fascinating experiment in itself.
Absolutely, no doubt about it. And I think golf is, you know, a sport that is not as physiologically limiting as a lot of other sports are. And so I think if a country can get, you know, a big pipeline for people into golf and excited about it and keep them healthy, I think that's the kind of thing that you're going to see. And I don't think any other country is doing that to the extent that Korea is. You know, maybe some others will, but most countries don't really have a big influx of youth golf. And Korea does, where they're, you know, using more modern training methods and things like that. So I think other places will catch up, but you know, it takes time.
We're talking with David Epstein, author of The Sports Gene. Hey, just before we go to a break here, I got to ask you about this, the Heritage Project. Health risk factors, training, and genetics. This is a pretty interesting part of the book for me. It really gets into the genetic side, and this is a touchy subject for all of us. But what we're learning about genes and gene mapping now could have a dark side as well, don't you think?
No doubt about it. I mean, I think that I just got called and asked about the Uzbekistan's Olympic Committee is starting to, like, gene test kids, you know, because that study that you referred to shows that we can sort of predict some of the responsiveness to training of people in a certain trait, and it's totally has nothing to do with how good they are to begin with, but how well they will adapt to the training is based very much on their genes. And, you know, so how is that going to be used? And I think we really need to be having these discussions like yesterday, because it's powerful technology, and it's going to become more powerful and cheaper, and I think, you know, are we going to use those for good, or are we going to use them to screen kids and try to put them in boxes and all that kind of stuff? So I hope we don't diminish the good of sports by getting too crazy about this stuff.
Yeah, and I think you're right. It could get very touch and go. And I can see this really, David, working its way very quickly into the professional ranks. You know, look, we just had the NFL combines, NHL combines just went down, the MLB draft. And if there was ever one area that I'm scared that the gene testing falls into, this is the one, because it's going to really change the landscape, and not for the better, I don't think.
I mean, there's some protection from employers ordering you to have genetic tests, but who knows where that's really going to go. And there are already tests that can show some elevated risk for injury, like you know, tearing your ACL.
Yes, exactly.
Like that. And we know very well that there's a gene that shows some people have diminished ability to recover from a concussion, right? Like, can you imagine if NFL teams figured out that somebody has that before the draft? Like, that could be dangerous information. I think we need to really, really get busy making rigorous regulations about genetic privacy.
This is a real important topic. Hey, stay tuned. We'll cut off for a quick break here, and we'll be back with more David Epstein, author of The Sports Gene, right after this on Crush Performance. Crush Performance, your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information. If you're a serious athlete, a weekend warrior, parent, or coach, join us each week as we investigate the latest trends and research coming out of the sport performance world. We'll visit with top athletes, coaches, and sports scientists to keep you on the cutting edge and to find out what it truly takes to achieve human maximum performance. You can visit us online at crushperformance.com, and Crush Performance Radio with me, Jeff Kershaw, can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, and at Radio Influence.
Listening to Crush Performance, your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information. Get the Crush blogs, podcasts, and performance links at crushperformance.com. Now, back to the show.
And welcome back to Crush Performance. Jeff Crichel here. Just a reminder, you can get to us via the website at crushperformance.com. Send us your questions, comments, smart remarks, blogs, podcasts, Twitter hookups are all there, crushperformance.com. Just coming off a great conversation with David Epstein, of course, author of The Sports Gene, talking about nature versus nurture and what it really takes to develop talent in this day and age. And we're joined right now via the Crush Hotline by our absentee co-host, Craig Moonen. Moo, how the heck are you doing?
I'm good, man. Back in the fold. It feels right. It just feels right.
It does feel right. And what a great time to come in after this great conversation with David Epstein, of course, author of The Sports Gene. Real interesting conversation there, you know, as we've been talking about human development and performance all month long. But just a really good perspective. And again, Crush must read The Sports Gene.
Yeah, David Epstein, former, or I guess, Sports Illustrated writer, you know, and a real interesting look at this conversation. He gets into it really scientifically, obviously, and this is kind of a question that we field and analyze to death on this show over the last number of years, is this whole concept of nature versus nurture. Like, are you born with it? Does anybody have the ability to make the pros? Or is it something that you have to have, like, a genetic predisposition for? Or can we put somebody in an environment and make them a pro? And this is a fascinating discussion.
Yeah, and I'm, you know, I'm tending, of course, we always believe that the process of development, if you're in the right place and the right time with the right resources, it can all really happen. And I do honestly believe that. Now, how far you get, there's way too many variables to even predict. But, you know, it's no different than the draft coming up in the NHL or the draft we just saw in Major League Baseball. We see hints of promise. We see this little light that just sort of shows there's some potential here. Let's get these young athletes into a system where we hope we could tap into and provide them with everything they need to get to the top of the game. And I think that's the same approach that we see whether we're talking music or whether we're talking business or academics. It really holds true across the spectrum of human development.
You're absolutely right. And it's like two stages almost. First, you got to find these people, or these people have to find it within themselves. They have to decide that I want to be the best pianist out there. I want to be the best basketball player out there. And they have to have that passion and drive within them. Or somebody's got to identify them and say, you know what, this guy or this girl looks like they could go down that path. And once you get past that stage, then we see it in the pros all the time. You'll see a guy on a hockey team, for example, that just has, you know, effortless talent, ability through the roof. Maybe doesn't have the drive and the passion that somebody on his line might have. Maybe a guy that you can just tell constantly needs to work at it, is really a grinder. You know, worked their way tirelessly through the league, through their development years to get where they got. But guess what, man? They're both there. They're both at the same spot, the highest level of their sport. So you can get there both ways. But identifying those people first, or finding it within yourself, that's the journey you want to take. That's the first step.
Yeah, and you know, we kind of talked about it with David here. We talked about this whole thing called self-selecting, and you know, whether athletes are self-selecting out because of burnout, overtraining, or they just lose interest, but they're also self-selecting in. You know, we really do believe that athletes, people in general, will gravitate towards things they're going to be successful at. That's just common knowledge. But now you get these people who are gravitating towards, you know, an endeavor, one, they're passionate about maybe, or two, they're just darn well good at for whatever reason, and then you give them the right coaching, the environment to prosper. We do believe we can create experts in any field in that environment, and that's an interesting thing. But it's not just genes and technology. You know, we look at swimming, and you and I have talked about this in depth, especially in the swimming world. You know, we talk about things like, you know, the new suits and how it's impacted swimming performance. But, you know, we could talk about the advent of the flip turn and how that changed performance in the pool. And then, you know, on the technology side, the addition of gutters along the pool to get rid of waves, to, you know, decrease turbulence in the water so we get faster times. But it's not just genes and technology. There are all this whole things when it comes down to these intangibles, the mindset, the grit, the aggressiveness, the character we talk about, which is really sort of the area that we're not too sure about, Moo, when it comes to developing high-level talent.
Yeah, and it's really hard to teach somebody to be tenacious. It's really hard to teach somebody to be a grinder, you know, like with that level of effort, desire, and that usually comes from deep within. That comes from, you know, growing up in an environment, let's say, where you've never been, you know, the top line player. You've never been first player picked. You've always had to work for everything that you've got, and so that's an inherent characteristic in people that they usually don't develop later on. And when we see the people with you know, the effortless talent, the people that just gravitate to things that they're good at. They stay in them because they're really good at them, and then it takes them in all these different places. But those people often don't have the same characteristics that somebody, you know, that has had to work their entire career at that level for. And you imagine what happens when you put both those things together. Now we're talking superstar.
And we have those superstars in just about every sport right now, and we can name them all. But you're right. Take the talent or a high performer at a young age, keep them engaged, whether that means, you know, pounding them with input and challenges, or whether it's laying off and just giving them one or two tasks from time to time. We know there's many different ways that athletes and professionals develop, you know, through the curve of, you know, human development. And that's really comes down to the environment and coaching, right? I mean, that's a big part of it for sure.
Yeah, and we can surround these people with, you know, just about every resource available nowadays. As you mentioned, I mean, there's the technology side of things. What is happening with the equipment? What's happening with the apparel? What's happening with the conditions of the track or the court or the pool, like you said? You know, we can give them such coaching now, not only from a physiological perspective, but technique changes, strategy. You know, once you get them into that avenue, then you can just start surrounding them with all of this powerful information to give them every chance in the world to succeed.
And succeed, that is the name of the game. Moo, thanks for your time today. Also want to thank David Epstein for coming on, of course, author of The Sports Gene. His website, thesportsgene.com, his blog is there, and also you can find links to his TED Talk, which is exceptional as well. Well, thanks everybody for tuning in today, and stay tuned. In the next couple weeks, we'll be talking about Canada's long-term athlete development program and how it is now spanning the globe, but well beyond sport as well. We're seeing academic institutions and also businesses modifying the long-term athlete development model to help them with their employee or personnel development, and we'll also be talking coaching in the next few weeks as well. So thanks for tuning in. We'll talk to you next week on Crush Performance.